previously on getting the Mecca.
There seems to be this system in regards to Stoicism, which usually concerns itself with only being able to control your own character. Lacking beauty comes from an almost lack of autonomy, a lack of personal autonomy. And so to wrap up essentially what Askeladd is saying, it is that the Vikings lack beauty because they are bound to things. They have not been able to control their own character.
This is Getting the Mecha, the weekly anime and manga show where we take things one step further. I analyze everything from arcs to OPs to episodes in my wacky but enjoyable quest to make sense of all of it.
Welcome back to Getting the Mecha, I'm your host Jamal today, and in today's episode, we continue our look through what is beauty in Vinland Saga. Last episode we looked quite closely at Askeladd's philosophy, and in today's episode I will be presenting you with my analysis of Canute's. This episode is going to feature a bit more to do with religion and Christianity, as Canute does speak about it in that context, but I will also be addressing how this almost counteracts, or at least compares to Askeladd's philosophy, not necessarily in quality, but how it does almost as a critique, or at least a counterpart to Askeladd's philosophy. I am assuming you have listened to part one of this. If you haven't, I would highly recommend it, as I will be comparing a lot of the contexts which we discussed and referring to a lot of the contexts I referred to in part one. But without further ado, let's get into the episode for this week. This is episode 47 of Getting the Mecha, a continuation into our look into what is beauty in Vinland Saga. Before we dive into the analysis, I think it is important that I do say spoilers for the war arc of Vinland Saga. I have also mentioned this in part 1, which I also said I highly do recommend listening to. So I will just reiterate, just in case, although I'm sure you got the message, that is spoilers for the war arc of Vinland Saga. If you are unaware of where the war arc is, that is the first season, or the content of the first season of the anime. And so let's get into the analysis regarding Canute's philosophy. A place I do want to start today is speaking a bit about beauty in general and how this kind of varies from a lot of the discourse we often know about beauty. Beauty in today's discourse is often seen, and we take it for granted, as subjective. In almost any discussion in regards to art, if someone is to say, your opinion is wrong, someone will counter it by saying art is subjective, or we can even go along the almost cliche phrase, beauty is in the eyes of the beholder, and that is, in summary, what beauty and the conversation around it revolves around almost. We get this on a very casual level, but we also get this on a very philosophical level in some cases, and some very academic discussions in regards to literature and art, etc. A lot of it is based on this notion of the opinion and subjectivity, and that applies just as much to beauty as it does art, and that is because we are looking at aesthetic philosophy. Often, and this is kind of a thing we see in the anime community, it's kind of, I don't take it seriously, but if we are to put it in the context of what we will be discussing today, if someone is to say, my opinion is objectively right, they will be met with this, opinions are subjective, you are stupid, because art and beauty are subjective experiences, it's down to me and my personal taste when it comes to evaluating these things. And ironically, the objectively right route is often seen as wrong. It's kind of weird because that is objective in itself, but that is usually what it's met with. But when we do speak about the philosophy of Vinland Saga and aesthetic philosophy in Vinland Saga, we have to remember the almost historiography or development of philosophy in regards to aesthetics. And this isn't to say, and I don't think I'm in the place because I have not studied philosophy, I should make that clear, but the conversation about aesthetics in regards to subjectivity and surrounding this subjective reality when it comes to it hasn't advanced to what we know it is to have been, or what we know it as today. And so the emphasis on subjectivity isn't necessarily going to be as strong in Canute's words in regards to beauty, because there are multiple other forms of reasoning and philosophical discourse to back up what he's saying, and that isn't necessarily postmodern discourse where we get this notion of subjectivity from often. And so now I think it is important to address what exactly Canute is saying when it comes to his almost shining moment in Vinland Saga, when he addresses and tries to understand what is beauty and what is love when he's confronted with the death of Ragnar as he's having the conversation with the priest. And so Canute and the priest basically allude to using their almost religious perspective that beauty can be found and maximum beauty can be obtained only through reconciling with their father, God. Beauty is found through regaining this connection with God, and only when one is reconciled they can reach this maximum state. The reasoning for this and the reasoning behind this is actually quite thick, and I would say one of the main reasons for this boils down to this notion of original sin. Original sin is this idea that humans are innately going to sin. It's the natural human tendency to sin, and hence that implies that we are naturally flawed and we are naturally imperfect. This can be tracked down to the fall in the Bible when Adam and Eve failed God in the Garden of Eden when they gave into temptation. And as a result, this brought sin to the world. So when we look at both the apple imagery and the way Canute expresses that, and the way the priest expresses that death is beautiful, that is all referencing to that. And it also references to the fact that death is a almost good thing, you can argue. Death isn't something to be feared. We did talk about this kind of in relation to the Stoic tradition, but in relation to Christianity, the ability to escape sin and the ability to escape suffering and the ability to escape doing wrong is seen as an opportunity rather than a downfall. It's seen as not a pessimistic thing, not a disadvantage, but in fact an opportunity to become one and reconcile with God our Father. I think a really easy way of phrasing it is that you aren't able to sin when you are dead. You don't have the ability to do wrong and betray and go against God's creation. We will speak about God's creation later in today's episode, but you belong in His hands. You belong in heaven now, if we assume you do go to heaven. If you do have a dualist view of the afterlife, if we are going to go into that, which I will go into. A lot of this imagery is very strong. As I also said, we do get the apple imagery, and we also get the environment around us. We get a very big sense of what God's creation is. And so the almost theological aspect or the religious aspect of then and the past is mixed quite well with today's environment, and how that all coincides together is that it is all within God's creation. This is God. I think it's quite appropriate to refer to the context. If you were listening to part one, and as I did say, this does heavily relate to the fact that we are in the Dark Ages. This is not only just an attempt to build up on aesthetics, which I've discussed for most of part one as well as today, but it's also an attempt to build on the religious aspects of this world of which we're trying to understand, and also building upon in the almost sense of within Vinland Saga, building up religion amongst them and spreading this information, because Christianity as we know and its development is quite eerie between this time. And what I mean by eerie isn't necessarily that we don't completely know how Christianity has developed, but there are still almost gaps. The Dark Ages is the gap in history. And so seeing this grow and evolve and have these questions answered and discussed is very important for Christianity and the Christian and almost religious element of Vinland Saga as a whole. One of the important things that the War Arc attempts to do is to constantly layer these elements, these theological, these religious, these philosophical elements. And I did say that the discourse needs to move on, or I thought that the discourse should move on in relation to this being just the world building arc, and I call this more the theme building arc or the philosophy building arc, to be almost overly extravagant about it. But it is important to emphasize that this is very important for this notion of world building. I think it would be very weird to talk about this time period without actually referring to the spread of religion and the growth of these what can be referred to as less rational beliefs. I want to move on to address something which I did talk about quite a bit in part one, and that is dualism. But I do think that in relation to Canute, and not even just Canute, because the conversation in regards to Christianity and the commentary in regards to religion extends a lot farther than just Canute himself, and I do want to kind of cover all the bases here. And so when we talk about dualism, I think it is important to establish how Canute and the Christian discussion in Vinland Saga, especially his, pushes back on this idea in itself. The show demonstrates the problem of dualism, or it almost critiques dualism in a passive sense. It shows what is wrong with it, or what it can do to people who, and it was most definitely a reality of the time to buy into dualism, mostly because of this belief of the Old Testament, which was very brutal in its terms. We have an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, very harsh words. God is seen as this omnipotent figure, this, although we can argue loving, but that does really come into the New Testament, and that kind of fits into Canute's discussion. But when we think of this more dualistic and hardcore look at Christianity, this does derive a lot from the earlier episodes. The problem with dualism is that it doesn't discriminate. It doesn't have these different gradations of which actions and sins are judged. If anything, everything which is considered bad in any sense is the complete bad. It's taken to its logical conclusion. And the perfect example of this is the girl with the ring. I don't know if I discussed this last time, but the girl with the ring feels almost like a thought experiment in Vinland Saga. It's an attempt to critique dualism and show how this can evolve from what it is there to how we can get to something greater and something which potentially is a lot more loving and benevolent for the people of the Dark Ages. In the case of the girl with the ring, stealing a ring is seen as just as bad as murder and rape and everything else. Everything bad you can think of is just as seen as the things which are considered as petty in today's context. If I was to steal water from a shop, which I wouldn't, but if I was to steal water from a shop, this is equal to genocide, for example. They are all seen and classified by this one term, which is the bad. Whereas the good is seen as the good, and that's all. They are split equally, if that sort of makes sense. There are two sides, but there aren't any different extents it can be measured by. And so I do think Canute's scene, as well as a lot of the other conversations in relation to religion and Christianity, relate heavily to this almost battle or conversation or argument, I think that's a good word, or disagreement between anti-dualism, if that even makes sense, and dualism. And as I said earlier, and I won't really go into the whole thing, this is mirrored between this almost conflict in the wording of the Old Testament and the New Testament. An eye for an eye versus turn the other cheek. Love thy neighbor versus pick up the sword. I know I'm not necessarily saying these in context, but I just want you to understand the almost different spins that these versions of the Bible take on God and almost his stance in relation to how humans should behave. This is a bit more of a personal take on this conflict between dualism and anti-dualism, and I do like that it is present, and I'll give the show credit for that, but personally I would say that the conflict is kind of, well, slightly contradictory, and my reasoning behind that, or my opinion behind that, is that love itself is still presented as quite dualistic. When we do learn about what is love from this new standpoint that the priest brings out of Canute, it's presented as if God is all-loving and humans don't have the ability to love. I think that's quite dualistic in itself, that one has the full ability and potential to perform an action or perform love, whereas the other just is robbed of it completely. I thought that that was a bit weird, mostly because when we think of almost the human imperfection, the natural human imperfection which comes from original sin, I don't think that would remove completely or destroy completely the ability to love, but that is just my take on it. I'm still happy with how it is, and I can't really fault it for that, but that is just my view of how it comes across. This framework, no matter my opinion, I think does come across as quite objective, and this is something which is most definitely a contrasting element versus Askeladd's philosophy, as we discussed. this is a very set in stone way of how to love and what is beauty. Beauty is God. God is the ultimate form of beauty, and humans are not beautiful. God's creation is beautiful. The human creation, because of its flaws, is not. And that is also, I did say at the beginning, despite my take on it, but that is what I'm talking about. It is still very dualistic nonetheless. So it does maybe run in a bit of circles, but maybe that is the point anyway. This is still a philosophy and point of view which is developing over time, and so to expect it to be perfect, I don't necessarily mean the narrative sense, but I mean more in the literal sense. To expect it to be perfect isn't reasonable, I don't think, because we are in the Dark Ages. Christianity is developing. Christianity hasn't moved on to the extent to which we know today, or further than that. So expecting these conversations to be had and maybe have a few quirks in them maybe is a benefit which I can give to them. Just to almost summarize this objective framework which we have for beauty, just to summarize the way of which this is an almost objective philosophy, well, it comes across as objective, is how we have this almost set in stone framework for Christians to use when it comes to how beautiful one is. You are your most beautiful when you are dead. Beauty is maximized when you reach God, when you are dead, when you are reconciled with your Father, when He has full control over His creation. And that creation, being the human being, isn't committing chaos. They aren't being a wild Viking doing whatever they want. If you argue that free will is a real thing, that is another debate for another time, but you reach this maximum state when you are out of control of oneself. It is kind of in reverse to Aeschylus' philosophy when we think of it. It is kind of in reversal to the Stoic view of it, which is controlling your character. You have the full ability and you want to maximize your control of your own character, since you can't control the rest of the world, and it is your attempt to become virtuous. But Canute's way of thinking kind of overwrites this, or I should maybe say the priest's way of thinking, but their way of thinking overwrites what Aeschylus says, which is that we don't have the full ability to control our character, and if anything, our character is flawed to a degree. And so the human character isn't something which is perfectible. Aeschylus, in summary, or I'm almost paraphrasing, is that one's character is for the molding. You have the ability to do this and you ought to do it because it's the best thing to do to achieve your aims and in order to maximize the pleasure of what you get out of life and achieve one's goals. I don't know if he says that directly, but we can kind of get that from it, especially when we think of Vinland Saga as this materialistic narrative. That is what he attempts to do, to almost nuance that notion. But when we look at Canute and the priest, it's very skewed. It's almost opposite. It's you don't have control, and so you may commit these acts and you may be flawed, but you will regain control, or at least God will do the controlling for you when you are in His loving care. The final thing I want to get onto is this notion of God's creation. I have referred to this a heavy amount today, but it is something very important to this philosophy, and it does extend to a bit more what you can define as tangible philosophy. This is a philosophy episode after all, and I do want to give you a bit more genuine philosophical context if you do want to read into it. And so that really comes from this thought of idealism. From what I do understand of idealism, it refers to how ideas are the only true way to capture the essence of the material. And we kind of see this sort of thought within the way Canute refers to the world and God's creation. He refers to the wind and the rain. He refers to the sky and the snow. He refers to these material items, the world around it. But it's the idea which is behind it which is so valuable. Firstly, God's creation is seen as the most beautiful. God and everything of which He created, which is classified as the material, is the absolute and almost objective source of divine beauty. And secondly, a good way to trace this back in regards to real philosophy is Platonic idealism. Plato has spoken a lot about idealism and his whole theory on forms and everything. And I'm gonna be honest, I don't know too much in regards to Plato. I haven't read enough, I would say. But when I was reading, I did find out that Plato is almost compatible with Christianity when it comes to idealism in some aspects. The way this can be interpreted when it comes to idealism and the true essence of ideas being encapsulated within the material is when we add God to the equation and when we suggest that God's creation and the material is a reflection of a perfect abstract reality. It's that perfection, it's that perfect form. And this is where perfection in Vinland Saga really does come in quite well. It is the perfection of the substantial, as Plato refers to it, I believe, or these ideas that is a lot more valuable than the material in itself. And so beauty in God is almost reinforced as it being the highest form. I would say, although we kind of already know that through his context and what he refers to as God and how he almost cares so much about God in general, as well as the priests, I think it is important to establish that this only reinforces God as the highest beauty. And I guess it also does reinforce that he is the most powerful as well, because his essence is in everything. I think I even did overlook this myself, but the fact that he is in everything does demonstrate his power, God's power, and God in everything. And hence that power is something which should be respected and something that should be admired by those who follow Christianity. And so just to wrap that up, Plato's idea of idealism and Platonic idealism can help us understand how God's perfection is in everything. God's perfection is everywhere, and the fact that it is everywhere shows how much of an omnipotent being he is, and the fact that he is, yes, this highest beauty and the biggest influence on human beings. We've spoken quite a lot, and I don't think I'm going to do an In the Moment segment this week, just because I think I did do one last week and there is quite a lot to digest from this episode. And so I would much rather go to closing thoughts and give a very big and thorough look at what this really means and summarizing the past two episodes. I think that is a bit more valuable than talking about Yozakura Quartet, which I have been watching recently. And so I'm going to kind of address what is the value of this philosophy. I have waffled on quite a lot today as well as last week about how good this is, but it's what does it do and why does it classify as good in my opinion? Firstly, I think it's important because it raises this very important question as to what is human nature, who are we, and how beautiful are we, how can we control this beauty? I think a maybe even better way of phrasing it, rather than me throwing loads of words around, is what is the character which we need in this narrative? And how capable are the characters in this narrative to achieve this material aim of getting to Vinland? This comes out of this, yes, I did say it's about human nature, but what comes out of this and what stems out of it is this notion of perfection. Askeladd suggests that we almost are perfectible. The world isn't necessarily perfect around us, but we have the ability to perfect ourselves and improve ourselves. He does this through referring to Stoic philosophy. This desired state of beauty is one of which is reachable, it is possible to achieve, whereas Canute is quite negative in this sense. The human character is something which can't be perfected. We have to accept these flaws. We don't have the ability to love. And who does, who has the ultimate ability to love, that is God. God almost has full control. He is the all-powerful and the all-loving. And so the human character is non-malleable. It is fixed. And so I think the ultimate value, and I think the thing I really want you to take away if you have listened to these two parts, thank you so much if you have listened across the past 2 weeks, that these philosophies and these insights aren't here for no reason. If anything, the true value of these is that they make Vinland Saga transcend a materialistic narrative. I addressed it quite a lot in part one, and that is that Vinland Saga is based on the material. Get to Vinland, start a society, collect resources, become strong, win the land grab. However, with these philosophies, we question the underlying thing which will influence how this materialistic narrative is reached, and that is the characters. They are the most mechanism or engine which will achieve this, or can potentially achieve this and bring this goal into fruition or into existence. This almost toggles the linear narrative which we're used to, or the linear narrative which it initially appears to be. This seems like a simple goal of marching through England and Wales, etc., to achieve the same. But this almost acts why linear narrative is distorted when we learn that the human character does not have the ability to achieve this in a linear fashion. And this character is going to have to change or is innately flawed when it comes to trying to achieve this. I think this just sets up for a lot more of a volatile narrative, or one of which isn't very predictable, because the beauty of individuals will influence how this narrative goes down, and how the human character is and its nature and form will influence and distort this linear narrative getting to Vinland. And so it does maybe point to the centrality of these characters and how important each and every character is, and the character of these characters or these people will be when it comes to achieving the central goal. Thank you for listening to this episode of Get in the Mecha. That has been episode 47. It has been a really fun 2 weeks doing these episodes. I do think that the philosophy of Vinland Saga, at least when this came out, was kind of overlooked. This was seen as the world building time, and I do agree, and I've addressed that in today's episode. But there is so much more to juice out of this, which I think was overlooked, and so I'm happy I did it, and it's been nice sharing it to you across the past 2 weeks. Next week should be a Monogatari series episode. I'm really excited for that. Hopefully everything goes okay. Okay, it's not necessarily a Monogatari series episode, but it's in relation to aspect ratios and how this has affected a lot of filmmaking and how they do affect filmmaking. I think it is a bit of a niche episode, but it's something I wanted to try out. And so that is what will be coming out next week. I can't really say what's going to come after that, but stay tuned. Follow on Twitter if you do want to get updates. That is at Get in the Mecha. I tweet a lot of things to do with animation, if that's what you're into, and updates on the show and all of that. If you did enjoy this episode, feel free to review it, whether that's on Apple Podcasts or wherever you can leave reviews, wherever you do get your podcasts. Thank you for listening to today's episode. I appreciate your time so much, allowing me to waffle about philosophy in your ears for a few minutes. Whatever you are doing, have a great week, day, month, and I will see you in the next episode. I have been your host, Jamal, today, and this has been Get in the Mecha. The music in this production goes as follows. 8-bit title screen by Joth, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, and Anomaly, Barrack Media's UnderSoundImage.org.